When Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014, it claimed that Ukraine was the aggressor to justify pre-planned military action. No one should be surprised if Russia instigates a provocation or incident, then tries to use it to justify military intervention, hoping that by the time the world realizes the ruse, it'll be too late.
Give President Biden and the Biden administration a lot of credit for leading the world to this point. The strategy of disclosing intelligence to demonstrate very clearly that Putin was trying to do once again what he had done before, use disinformation, false flag operations in order to try to justify an unjustifiable invasion, was incredibly smart, unprecedented, and it seems to have really woken up so much of the world and stymied Putin.
The strategy of declassifying intelligence around Russia's intentions of invading Ukraine has recast a global narrative about Russia and possibly about authoritarianism too. The way the US declassified and shared intelligence on Russia's military intentions has effectively now robbed Russia of narrative control of the situation. That's no small thing. Not only did Russian soldiers and armor gather on Ukraine's borders for the world to see, they had zero element of surprise before the attack. This is in dramatic contrast to how Russia annexed Crimea in 2014, employing a sleight of hand in which unmarked Russian soldiers and gear arrived on Ukrainian territory. In headlines, the 2014 Crimea takeover moved from fear of an invasion to de facto control or annexation with no period of invasion. And so there was no moment for the international community to react. Biden was vice president during that period, and he would have remembered, as would have today's Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, and everyone else who'd been outmaneuvered waiting for Putin to adhere to some sort of rules of the game around these things. Instead, Putin and his image makers subverted them. But the US campaign to forewarn the public of an imminent invasion has had another collateral effect so far. It has blown up a certain unofficial worldview on US and Western power and on democracy that has come to color the broader debate between democracy and authoritarianism. How long this lasts is anybody's guess, but it is true that these intelligence disclosures have armed the global public with tools to understand what Russia is doing. This seems to have been something that the Russians were unable to counter or anticipate. But the fact that the US, UK, and Western allies were using information to forewarn of the attack, and then the attack came, has disrupted this informal but widespread ideology of cynicism promoted by the Kremlin. This cynicism, nurtured relentlessly by pro-Kremlin voices, pointed to the disastrous US invasion of Iraq in 2003 as a sort of starting point, an example of Western hubris, hypocrisy, and violence. Yet the ongoing, systematic Russian and Syrian slaughter of innocents, targeting of hospitals and rescue workers in Syria during the civil war there, was given cover by these same voices. This is part of the cynical pro-Putin view from the left. From the right, Putin is viewed as a kind of holdout of white, masculine, Christian traditionalism. Even this week, Trump has praised him, as did another far-right figure in the United States. But from both left and right, Putin's willingness to launch an invasion of Ukraine, unprovoked, has, for all but the most rusted-on supporters, stunned into silence the voices of people who were inclined to give Putin the benefit of the doubt and hold him up as an acceptable voice in global affairs. A quick look around social media in the immediate aftermath of the invasion, and you could see voices such as Tulsi Gabbard's or Edward Snowden's, and they were all almost stunned into silence. There's a sense of a gap, a break in the endless commentary that you hear from these voices. It's hard for them to know how to address the outrage of this attack. But also, the mini-Putins, the politicians in Central and Eastern Europe who are liberal supporters of the Russian leader, such as Hungary's Viktor Orban, were faced with a reality sandwich like none other. Russia attacked Ukraine this morning with military force, Orbán said. Together with our European Union and NATO allies, we condemn Russia's military action. Never mind how Orbán is often at odds with NATO and the EU over the authoritarian drift of Hungary. Something big had changed. Now, since Russian regulators have throttled Twitter, it is possible that this could be affecting the gap in content generated in support of the Kremlin. We'd have to wait and see on that. But on an individual reaction level, the Ukraine invasion is such a dramatic development that it robs the anti-imperialist crowd of a long-standing post-Iraq invasion talking point. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is naked imperialism. It is colonialism. U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders, before the invasion, put out a statement that warned that Vladimir Putin may be a liar and a demagogue, but it is hypocritical for the U.S. to insist that we, as a nation, don't accept the principles of a sphere of influence. Immediately after the invasion, he was saying, now is the time to maintain unity with our allies and impose severe sanctions on Vladimir Putin and his government. The fact that the White House had this information out not for days or weeks, but for months, appears to have primed the global public for an event, one that many, myself included, didn't believe would happen. Now that it has happened, so vividly and with such terror, forcing responses from governments around the world, the conversation about authoritarianism shifts. If this has a lasting effect, if the reputation of Putin takes a lasting hit, even among those in the West inclined to see him as a global icon of dissatisfaction with the status quo, there could be a parallel to the year 1953, when a new Soviet premier, Nikita Khrushchev, revealed the extent of the murderous purges of Soviet citizens by his predecessor, Joseph Stalin. That news sent chills through the communist world outside of Russia, and it did so in a way that the communist left never fully recovered from. Now, we'll have to see. Given the accelerated time that we live in today, this moment of shock could be forgotten within a month. But if not, this could be a pivot. It's also worth adding, when talking about what happened in the 1950s, there was another dimension to anti-communism at the time, and that was the self-revulsion among former communists for their support for a system that was actually responsible for the deaths of millions in Russia. In other words, in 1953, things changed. And it's possible that in 2022, and one of the collateral outcomes of this war and of this invasion that has been driven solely by Vladimir Putin, is that there's this change of heart in the debate about democracy and about how acceptable authoritarianism is. Today, so much of the cocktail of distrust pushed by the pro-Kremlin media resides on some key events of the recent history. One is that 2003 Iraq War invasion. The other is the subprime market meltdown that led to the financial crisis in 2007 and 2008 that created and widened inequality, and it put a burden on those that could least afford it. For younger people in democracies, these are defining events. Well, the Russians wisely and deftly used information to sow doubt and distrust between Western citizens in 2016. Because of the way the US and allies forewarned about this war that has actually come to pass, one of the fallouts for the Biden White House may be a dimension of renewed trust. Before the invasion began, parts of the public, including those inclined towards anti-imperialist rhetoric, began asking, where is this war these governments keep harping on about? They followed the narrative of skepticism for these governments and media statements, only to watch, alongside everyone else, in real time, as the Russian military did in fact begin to launch missile strikes and to invade. The networked experience of the event is upfront and visceral, and the usual upside-down world of contested debate about the reality of the moment, the kind we saw for years in Syria or in Ukraine in 2014, or in fact in the US in recent years, that wasn't possible. Normally disinterested and skeptical people now understand that the US government took this action not as a cynical power play, but an effort to shape a situation and avert a war. Even though the information effort was unsuccessful, the government's intentions remain plain to see. In a society in which many depictions of the U.S. government or democratic governments veer towards the malign and conspiratorial, this is notable. This is the White House as an early warning system for the global public. And the use of information like this is significant in another way. In one of the numerous releases from the U.S., the White House cited a quote from Joe Biden's inauguration. It said, "There's truth and there are lies. Lies told for power and for profit. And each of us has a duty and responsibility as citizens and as Americans, and especially as leaders, leaders who have pledged to honor our Constitution and protect our nation, to defend the truth and to defeat the lies." Words used in a domestic U.S. context are applied to an international situation. But scratch the word Americans and substitute citizens of the world. Scratch the mention of the American Constitution and substitute the universalized Enlightenment values it was built on. Suddenly, values are being placed around information, and in a way that is relevant for Ukrainians, Australians, Estonians, Finns, Germans, Taiwanese, Japanese, people anywhere who seek a safe and secure and peaceful future. It takes the debate about democracy and information to a new place.